Welcome among
Derelist.
I'm here in Wolverton, close to Milton Keynes, for Concrete Cow. And who are you?
My name's Amy. I have been running Concrete Cow for a few years. Obviously, it hasn't been on the last couple of years because of global situations, but it's been running for quite some time now, although I didn't start it.
So is it the big return this year, or was it back last year already?
It was back spring.
Was the first one.
Spring, March.
22, yes. And we did the first one at the start of this year, or the one that first started again, and it went fairly well.
Yeah, it runs twice a year, March and October. And
it's twice a year, actually.
Yeah, it's always been that way, just, you know, spring and autumn. We don't try and compete with the big summer conventions.
Who are you? Because you joined the conversation.
I'm Robin, yeah, and I've been going to the Milton Keynes Role Playing Club for quite some time. So it's run by the Milton Keynes Role Play Club. We play quite an eclectic mix of games. So we also do, we've got a lot of Call of Cthulhu, but we run a lot of small indie games. Basically, anyone can come along and run a game as they see fit. Just turn up on the day, place a sign-up sheet up, and you can go. And we run three games a day.
So it started with the club?
The club predates Concrete Cow. The club's been going now for, I want to say, nearly 20 years, actually. Mm. And the Concrete Cow was started by one of the club members, Neil Smith, who's not here at the moment, but he does still attend the club and attends Concrete Cow. He's one of our regular GMs. And the club started, I think, with four or five members, and it's fluctuated between 25 and 50 in the time that I've been going, which is about 14 years now.
I won't take your time too much because people are starting to arrive, but what would be your big sales pitch to convince anyone in London or across the UK or even the world to travel to Wolverton to attend Concrete Cow?
It's a great convention because it's a good way to play, to get into the hobby if you haven't played RPGs before, because there's lots of bite-sized short games you can play in. And equally, if you are established in the hobby, there's loads of games that are going to be here that you haven't heard of. Because as Robin said, there's usually a lot of indie games. We have a lot of writers who come to this, so quite often you can end up in a playtest for Call of Cthulhu or Cult or whichever is the new one coming out. And it's just a nice, chill convention. It's not crazy busy. It's not in the heart of London. It's not frenetic or anything. It's just a good, chilled roleplay day.
Paul Frick is here, who is one of the writers for Call of Cthulhu. James Mullen, he writes a lot of his own indie small games, but it really depends on who's here on the day, yeah. And also the other good thing about here is really good rail links. We're right next to the train station. You can walk straight here. If you're coming from London, it's very easy.
It's very convenient. You should not bring a outdated rail card, which was what happened to me, and then you need to pay extra. But thank you very much, the two of you, and I look forward to my day here.
Enjoy!
Do I see beautiful girls?
to a seat by the pull of a man to laugh at my comedy.
I'm now in the massive concrete car trade hall, speaking with the person in control of the hall of the trade hall.
Yeah.
With your booth. Who are you?
We're called Dungeon Bones, and we specialize in a few accessories for 5th edition. So we have condition chips, which are award-winning, and they are basically to keep track of conditions that you get inflicted on during 5th edition. They're made of high-quality ceramic. You can basically put them on a mini on top of them, or if you want to keep hold of it on the rule, on the back, they've got all of the rules.
Ah, yeah, you put your mini and the text is visible. Yeah.
Yeah, so a mini would sit like so, and then obviously on the back, this one's probably my favorite because it was hard to get all 5 stages of exhaustion on a single chip, but we managed to do it. So yeah, so that's our main product. We won the UK Games Expo Best Accessory in 2021, I think it was now. COVID made me forget. And then we also have these, which were shortlisted in the best accessory of 2022. And these are spell tracking tomes. So you remove your spell slots for the day. As you spend them, you return them back to your tome. And it's just a way for new players, really, to keep track of their things like their spell slots, because too often a level 2 wizard thinks that they get level 2 spells. That's not the case.
You have a nice feel. I used to be a poker player, and
they're proper poker chips. They're screen printed on, so it's almost impossible to damage the printing. There's no stickering or anything. And then our final product, which isn't even released yet, these are just rough prototypes at the moment. But they're mini replacement tokens. So this would be a ghost on one side and a ghoul on the other. And they would sit, they've got the same base size as a regular miniature. And for a price of about 1 miniature, you get a set of 12 mm-hmm. double-sided ones. So you could run a whole horde of goblins and some hobgoblin bosses.
So are off they pre-packaged with a horde of goblins?
Yeah, so you're going to have a goblinoid set, which is going to be goblins, hobgoblins, orcs, and bugbears. You've got an undead set, which is ghosts, ghasts, skeletons and zombies. There's our zombie, and there's our skeleton.
makes me want to play 4th edition again. And you clear all those minions from the board.
Well, it's just a way to sort of build up a collection really quickly and cheaply, essentially.
For storage, they're also much easier, or carrying around.
Yeah, well, for something like this, a convention where you might need 50 miniatures for a day, and they're fragile and stuff like that, you can take 3 small bags and you're away.
Oh, did this all get started? Did you move from, I don't know, doing your own little cardboard tokens to actually I'd like something nicer and I can do it myself?
This was born out of me picking up 5th edition. This was originally born out of me picking up 5th edition and just being pretty rubbish with some of the rules. So I wanted to make something like this, and I sort of come from a background in board games. And I thought, you know, it would be worth doing something which would be useful to track. And then I looked into it. I ran a Kickstarter. So we raised money through Kickstarter. We got a wholesaler in America who's ordered a few thousand of each of the products so far. So, yeah, we've just picked up the excess, and we sell them at the UK Games Expo, other conventions. We sell them on Etsy as well, and that's basically where we're at.
Brilliant. Well, the signing off is over, so I'm going to leave you. Everything is available worldwide?
If you go to America, it's available on Amazon, and in Etsy, it's if you go to the UK or the rest of the world, I'll sell you through Etsy.
I will include a link in the description of the episode.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
I just finished my first ever session of Paris Gondola, the life saving magic of inventorying at Concrete Cow, Milton Keynes. And turns out there was another podcaster at the table. Who are you?
I'm part of the cast for Forging Farrier podcast.
So, and what's your name? I must say, we spent 3 hours playing a character who would not tell their name to anyone.
Yeah, my character was not going to fall for any of that kind of thing. No, my actual name is Kat.
What is this show about and what's your character in there?
It's an actual play podcast. At the moment, we've just finished releasing series 2 of Tyranny of Dragons playthrough.
Okay.
But it's incredibly roleplay heavy. We've gone quite off-piste at times. Some sections have taken longer. I described it as being like the archers with dice for a while. So it's roleplay heavy rather than monster killing.
So is it? Would you recommend to jump straight to series 2 because the beginning of series 1, the production value wasn't quite there yet? Or do you need to start as... the production value was already very good with series 1 and you definitely need to have watched series 1 to understand what is going on in series 2?
No, I do know people who've started on series 2. I think because we've all like got to know each other much better over the time, it's definitely more gelled by series 2 and it's really, really dramatic at times as well. Very emotional.
So who's your character?
My character is a rogue called Rosanna Scatterheart, but she's not like the traditional rogue because she's got terrible dex and things.
She's not like the other rogues.
No, she's not. She's too cool for that. She's a mastermind, so she's all about like pretending to be other people and throwing her voice around and things like that. But she's pretty terrible in combat in every way, and also not very stealthy for a rogue.
What's the rest of the group like?
It's an all-halfling party. So we've got a fighter, a ranger, and a druid.
I like the idea of an all-halfling party. That sounds cool.
Yeah, it means that playing in any other campaign where you roll a one, you always go, I can't.
Are there episodes, again, starting from the start, or are there episodes that you especially recommend for people to check out?
Oh, that's a very tough one. I think there's a particularly awesome episode towards the end of season 2, but I cannot for the life of me think of the name of it. So I'd probably just have to say start at the beginning and then just wait for there to be a really, really awesome one.
So now I'm going to do something a bit naughty.
Oh.
Not naughty like that.
Not the cowbell again.
You just played my game. I think you had a good time. Well, you purchased a copy. Thank you very much for that.
I had a great time.
Thanks to the organizer of Milton Keynes for allowing me to sell a copy. What did you think of it?
I thought it was great fun. I think my favorite part of like role-playing games is the role-playing part of it, and it really does encourage that. It's also really nice to think of the denouement of a game. Like, what happens afterwards? We've already done all of the hard stuff. And no, it was really fun, and the silliest element as well. Like, I love a bit of silliness. Literally tears of laughter by the end of it. So.
What would be your highlight object of moment of that session of Paris Gondo, the life-saving magic of inventory? There were a lot. It was an excellent group. I ran this game a lot, and sometimes I'm like, back to the salt mine, running it again. And then you got groups who are fantastic, like today.
Yeah, I mean, I think because we all brought our own little bit of flair to it, I think. Yeah, oh gosh. I mean, I loved the flamboyancy of the bard and the just increasing fed-upness of the fighter. that was particular highlights, I think. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed all of it, actually. There were definitely some great quotes, but I'm not going to say them here.
What object did you create?
I created a stalactite that was effectively just a really good stick. It had a massive encumbrance.
Brilliant. Is it your first time at Concrete Cow?
It's my first time at any conventions.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you're taking little step. I was encouraging you again. We were at online exchanges about coming to Dragon Meet, which is bigger. It's not the biggest, but it's bigger.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to go to Dragon Meet. That is definitely my next on the agenda, as long as I can make it work. So
yeah, but what was Concrete Cow like for you in terms of your first experience of a convention?
I'm really enjoying myself. I was feeling a bit shy when I arrived because I've not done it before, but immediately felt quite welcomed and had a great time meeting new people.
Where can people find your show and yourself when you wish to be found?
Our podcast can be found on anywhere you listen to podcasts, basically, Forging Farrier. And me, myself, if you enjoy my voice, I'm on Twitter as Odia Cat with 2 T's.
Brilliant. I will include it in the description. Thank you so much for this game. And do you know what you're going to play this afternoon already?
No, I haven't decided yet. The one I was going to play is sadly no longer running for COVID reasons. So magic. We'll find out.
Well, there's countries in the pits, and I really should admit that I feel it's time to do something about it. Our democracy is splintered, sold out to the highest bidder, and I only see a single way around it. Oh. Let's stop being so attendant and declare our independence and create a nation where we're in control. We can find a little island and we'll climb up to the highlands and we'll paint a flag and hoist it from a pole. Oh. Well, it sounded pretty sweet, but it's a little incomplete. There'd be nothing there to eat but weeds and ants. We could bring along some friends and they could do the odds and ends and start a farm so we could live off of the land. Oh. A place to stay so we could find a way to pay to hire an architect and builders to construct it. I suppose they'd need to buy some rudimentary supplies. They could use my credit card and just deduct it. Oh. Limit, so we need to find some funding from our friends. We'll need to form an axis if the motherland attacks us, so we better start an army to defend. Oh. We'd be careful on the spending, we'd have banks to do the lending, we'd stay away selfishness and greed. But I think our little nation's gonna need some light taxation if we wanna pay for everything we need. Like schools and banks and shopping malls, fighter jets and border walls, city bus and subway stops, doctors, cops and donut shops, water, gas and sewer lines, super highway traffic signs, museums, parks, aquariums, zoos and planetariums. I might need to think this through, 'cause there's a lot of things to do just to get this little nation on the map. And I'm not sure I would make it. Yeah, this emperor is naked and I'm tired and I'm ready for a nap. Well, maybe I should stay at home and fix the problems on this road and spread out to the neighborhoods, make a change and do some good. We've only got so many years to make our mark and disappear and enjoy the parks, aquariums, zoos and planetariums.
In-person conventions, there are one thing I love about them is that you finally meet or meet again people you interact with online. And you are?
I am. I'm Stuart. I'm known as Megatron46 on Twitter. And yeah, no, we have, I think we have met once before, maybe at a Dragon Meet, I think.
I'd be surprised if we haven't met yet. Now, did I made the connection when I met you?
I don't think so.
Is a charming fella.
Yeah, yeah.
But beyond that, making a connection that, oh no, that's Megatron.
Yeah, no, it's not. But it's always lovely to catch up with people, and it's been a long time since we've been able to meet up in person. I know, obviously, there's stuff been running at the end of last year, but it's been a bit hit and miss. So this is really nice to come out and see people and chat and play some games. Hopefully, going to play some Vaesen in the afternoon.
Looking at the sign-up sheets, and I'm like, it would be a pity if no one signs for my second session of Paris Gondo, but if I could play some Vaesen, finally, I created a character for Vaesen, and then the session, it was supposed to be a stream, it never happened. So
no, that's annoying,
I got an itch to scratch with that. So you've been at Concrete Cows many times?
No, I've been months before, literally just before lockdown. So the March Concrete Cow, just before everything shut down due to COVID, I was here and I ran. I played Liminal for the first time with Sue Savage, which was phenomenal. And that made me go out and buy the book. I was like, I love this game. And then I ran some Romance of the Perilous Land and some Dungeon World when I was here last time. And yeah, that I've only been here once before. And it was really nice. Really enjoyed it. Really friendly. A really nice convention here. And then this morning ran an impromptu game of Cogs, Cakes and Swordsticks.
Oh, nice. From Lynn Hardy, of the show.
Friend of the show.
I'm editing an episode right now about The Name of the Rose, a RPG Academy Film Studies.
Oh, yeah.
And it was recorded with Lynn Hardy as a guest. So
nice, excellent. Oh, I haven't seen that film for years.
Oh, well, you should have a rewatch and listen to
the episode.
It should be out next Monday.
Okay.
So.
Oh, well, I'll listen. But no, I remember watching it and really enjoying it, really enjoying the film. It's one of the books that I keep meaning to read as well because it's like a classic. But no, I'll check that out, definitely. I decided at the last minute to run that this morning. And it was great. I had people riding dinosaurs.
Excellent.
Who doesn't love dinosaurs?
So it sounds like a lot of fun. Do you know that I'm designing a game inspired by The Name of the Rose, by the way?
I did not know
Rose
that.
Rose would have been.
Excellent. So, okay, that's cool.
I'll send you a link afterwards.
Yeah, please do.
So you ran Dungeon World 2 years ago?
Yeah, I did. No, I'm a big Dungeon World and Cogs, Cakes and Swordsticks are my go-to games with minimal prep because I know them very well. They suit my GM style, which is a handful of bullet points and a lot of improvisation because I can do that with those. Some things like D&D, you can still improvise a bit, but there's more statistics to learn.
You need your stat blocks.
You do need your stat blocks and like spell descriptors because I can never remember what spells do. But Dungeon World, I really like that. I'm a big Powered by the Apocalypse fan. Probably my favorite system, if I had to choose one, that 2d6 plus. I like it. It's pretty simple. And that then, because playing Dungeon World got me into playing Liminal, obviously, which is kind of linked on that, linked to Sue's game a couple of years ago. So, which I really enjoy. Yeah, Dungeon World, and Romance of the Perilous Lands by Scott Malthouse is a great game. That's a great game.
Another guest of the RPG Film Studies, we did A Knight's Tale with him.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. That book is beautiful.
It's a gorgeous book.
The art in that book is phenomenal. And it's fun. It's so much based around British folklore and like the tales of Arthur and all of it. He's woven so many different strands all together to make that game. It's a beautiful game. And it's really straightforward to play. It's not overly complicated. It's a nice one to go for. So that's if you fancy something a fantasy game that's a bit different, where you get to be a knight in shining armor. And some of the spell names are great as well. There's some great spells in there. But yeah, it's good. It's a fun game.
I need to hook up with you to play some Dungeon World because that's a game I try to run.
Mm.
When I read it, it comes across as simple.
Yeah.
And I want to do it right. But when I run it, I struggle because I'm still getting on board Powered by the Apocalypse. Again, and now I'm designing a Powered by the Apocalypse game, actually. But it's funny, especially with Dungeon World, which has got its dungeon crawling.
Yeah.
But you come with a number of habits, which are not exactly bad habits per se with trad games, but there are habits which are actually can get in the way when you try to play Dungeon World. And I really would like to play Dungeon World, air quote, properly, as meant.
Yeah, well, no, well, what we'll do, I mean, there's a great podcast out there called Spout Law, which is a brilliant, if you want to hear Dungeon World played brilliantly, listen to Spout Law. They're an American, Canadian, anyway, it's called Spout Law, it's brilliant. They self-sabotage amazingly well, which is hilarious. But actually, they play Dungeon World the best I've ever heard it. With the big thing with Dungeon World for me, and with any Powered by the Apocalypse game, is the way I always tell my players is, what do you want to do? And then we'll find what fits that. So I want to kick him in the face in Dungeon World, that's hack and slash. Oh, I want to swing off the chandelier and do this. Okay, so that would be, I know, defy danger dexterity. So that, think about what you want to do rather than thinking about, okay, let's look at my playbook. What can I do from hit that? Think, well, what do I want to do? And then we'll match what works best with it. And that's I found that a really helpful kind of way to approach it.
Yeah, the thing you, for me, it was clearer with Mask New Generation. It's a game of intent and narrative framing. It's not a game of action, reaction.
Yes, that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, it's all about narrative, which ties into my, I love telling stories. I love being a storyteller. So actually that way of framing it, that narrative drive, is kind of how I approach any game I run. Even D&D, even some of you will woofer up when I've played that. That's still my focus, but it does make it a little more... some games allow that to be a little bit easier than others.
You know, I'm a big advocate of encouraging people to play a number of different games, and at the same time not expect people to like everything
time. Yeah.
But I think it's a great experience to play something like Dungeon World, even if you are really into Dungeons & Dragons, because you will develop some skills, get some perspective about something which you might have been doing, but not consciously.
Yeah.
And then that, I think it really will enhance or give you more tools in your toolbox to do stuff in your air quote regular thing or the thing you are more into. It's still very informative to play one page RPGs also.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because the more games I play, I don't like all of them. There's some games I play where I've gone, I'm not going to play that again. But what it's given me is actually, A, I'm glad I've played it. But also, as you say, you take things from different games to other systems. So something you might learn, or even just an approach or a way of thinking, and then apply that to another game that you play, I think is really, really important. I think makes everyone, it certainly made me a better GM. The more games I play, the more systems I play, and also, which then in turn makes me a better player. So trying stuff out, but I do think Dungeon World, I still think is my go-to game. You can win a game, that's the one I reach for first.
Mm. Your persona online, Megatron, how would you describe your activity online? You're just an enthusiastic RPG player, or are you a designer?
I'm certainly not a designer, and I don't write blogs. You'll either find me drifting into conversations about superheroes or role playing games. I'm a teacher, so occasionally ranting about education in the UK. But generally, you'll find me, I'm approachable, I'm nice, I always enjoy talking to people. But yeah, no, you can find me engaging in various chats with people in the UK about, and across the world, but about games, about experiences of games, games they like, and appreciating really good art. I follow so many artists, both comic artists, RPG artists, like painters. I love.
There's so much good stuff.
I got
Google Docs for different game design projects. And each time I've got this header which says art, and it's just links to each time I see something. Oh, this is what I would like in this game. I copy paste the handle of the artist and put it there. Yeah. And those lists grow.
Yeah, I hit bookmark on Twitter a lot. Bookmark. And then I go through every now and again and go, right, okay, who are all these people? Right, let me make all those links. But yeah, also talking about books. I love talking about books, what I've read, what other people are reading, getting recommendations, recommending other stuff. But yeah, fairly genial. I don't know. Sometimes I'm on Twitter more than I should be, and sometimes it doesn't feel like I'm on enough. Anyone's welcome to come and say hello at any time and have a chat about all kinds of stuff.
So as a lover, I'm curious, because I was talking about that yesterday with someone for a project at the moment. I'm getting to read something which I consider a monument, a big classic in Franco-Belgian literature, investigative crime novels. The author's name is Georges Simenon, and his character, negatively. No, no. I was about to ask, is Georges Simenon known in any way of shape or form?
No. I don't speak or read any language other than English, other than incredibly basic French. Very basic
it's
French.
Just, but he's so big in the French-speaking world, especially in Belgium. He had TV shows, movie adaptations. I was wondering, if other characters, like Jules Verne, I mean, it's not as big as Jules Verne. If sometimes it's difficult to tell. I was listening to, A Knight's Tale episode, and I was mentioning to my guest that actually, as far as I know, the Canterbury Tales are not really known of in the French-speaking world.
That's such a huge fundamental part of English literature over here. The Chaucer. Exactly, isn't it? It's those things. There's some things, some things, I suppose, travel and translate really well because they kind of like there's something that captures the imagination internationally, and other times things don't. Like, I mean, I suppose I didn't really think about Chaucer in the Canterbury Tales because I've always studied it, like since I was like 16 up, and it's such a fundamental part of the development of literature in this country. It's like, well, I mean, I don't even know what the equivalent would be in France or Germany. I mean, I've read bits here and there in translation. But...
Chrétien de Troyes.
Okay.
I think, what was that translated in English? Chrétien de Troyes, the Joust or the Song of Roland.
Right, of course. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Who knows? I mean, yeah. But again, but I'm interested in just talking about stuff and particularly literature. I mean, I'm an English teacher, so I find that fascinating and looking at how things develop over time. And all that stuff. But yeah, that's great.
Where can people find you when you wish to be found?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at Megatron_46, or I do run a campaign for the podcast Forging Farrier. You can find me DMing Tyranny of Dragons on that. And probably all good bookshops, really. You know, if you bump into someone with glasses and a goatee, I know that's quite non-specific. But yeah.
It's rather common in the type of environment where both of us sort of...
The best place is Megatron_46 on Twitter.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And now we're going to rush both of us to be the one who picks the last pot on Vason this afternoon.
Cool. Cheers. Thanks very much.
I will... The noise of battle rolled among the mountains by the winter sea. Winter sea. Shouts of traitors, shouts of knights with spit and fury for the fight did ring out loud. The king was proud. Mordred's sword the king did feel. He staggered full of tears and still, but still he stood. With the last stroke of Excalibur, the king cut Mordred and himself, then fell in blood, in the mud. As he lay, as the king lay. Sir Bedivere did lift the king and carry him, he carried him. Thank you.
three queens with faces bolted wail and carry him, they carry him forevermore. And the king, and the king, and the king, and the king was dead.
All right, the day's closing, the two nice session of games, and now I'm with, who are you?
I'm Robin, yeah. Uh-huh. Talked to earlier, and I think it's gone very well. We've run several games. There's been, I played it Heckin' Good Doggos this morning with James Mullen. Awesome. That's a recently kickstarted system. And I ran Mutant Gen Lab Alpha in the afternoon, which went very well, I think. Both good. And we've got Matt Sanderson's here, who's from the Good Friends of Jackson Elias
nice.
Podcast, and he's running Cult. No, he's running
Vason,
yeah, which I haven't got to play yet. I really
me
want to play
neither.
That game.
When I sign up, so yeah, I wasn't sure if I would be running a second session of my game this afternoon, so I waited to see if people signed up, and then, but sadly, that one was fully booked.
I really wanted to play your game. It looked really interesting. Oh. I mean, can you tell us anything about it? I mean,
I'm gonna mispronounce that. It was called Svalvard.
I've played that before.
Have
yes.
you? So it's interesting. I think to some extent it comes with a system, but the spirit of it is that you could play it with any system you wish, and there are advice about it.
Because I played it with Call of Cthulhu Delta Green when I played it, and that was a Delta Green scenario. But yeah, we probably shouldn't spoil it, but it's got a really interesting mechanic in it.
Yeah, I would describe it as it's set in the 90s, but it's a contemporary. You buy a supplement, and it's kind of a dungeon with playing special ops people, so we would work with Knight Black Agent as well.
Yeah, I think so.
And there's a Cthulhu thing going on out of turn control, / the thing also could be an influence you see there. And the supplement describes, the book describes everything room by room, and you explore them. It's described as a roguelike. Mm-hmm. So in the vein of video games, also like Metal Gear Solid and this sort of
well,
thing.
Well, that's a spoiler. I
is
don't
that?
Know if you tell people. Yeah,
is that?
I think it is a spoiler because when I played it, I didn't know there's a certain aspect of the plot that you don't know and isn't advertised necessarily in the scenario. But it's a great little trick.
Yeah.
So let's not spoil it for other people.
Yeah, rooms are described. There are things in those rooms, and those things in those rooms might be needed further down the way, so...
I love it. I think it's a great concept. It's very different. So I think it's one of those things that you play once and you couldn't play it again, but it's beautiful. Beautiful. Okay.
So tell us more about what you run this afternoon.
So yeah, I ran Mutant Gen Lab Alpha, which is a Year Zero engine where you are all uplifted animals living in the post-apocalypse. You don't know that, in fact, you're living in a prison created by robots.
Oh, wow.
That basically the humans have all
spoiler.
Died. In. Yeah, that is a bit of a... It's not really, because it tells you right at the start. And there's a big player section, so you know what's going on, but as a character, you don't really know what's going on. And that's what I love about it. You end up having these situations where you as animals find this human technology and these remnants of the humans, and you're like, what does this do? Why did they do these things? And you get into these weird conversations in character about that, which is one of my favorite aspects of the game, because you end up kind of... Basically, I don't know if you know much about the Year Zero engines, but there are three different campaigns.
Uh-huh.
So one is you play the humans who are mutated, it's post-apocalypse. This one is where you play animals that eventually discover that there's a world outside their enclosure. And finally, there's one where you play robots that become kind of sentient and escape their own bonds. And then there's much more as well.
So when you said it's Mutant Year Zero, you didn't mean... Because when you said that, I thought you meant like the system, because Mutant Year Zero, as far as I know, is the same core with changes for Aliens, Blade, Simba Room, and Vason, actually.
So Mutant Year Zero was the original game,
uh-huh.
And then Mutant Gen Lab Alpha is the sequel with the animals, and there's another one. But yeah, you're right,
they're all
set in the same world. Yeah, they're all set. And I think also there's hints that things like Tales from the Loop is the precursor to Mutant Year Zero, possibly as well.
I always feel that's
the link. Yeah, because the world is sort of breaking down. The weird robots that are in Tales from the Loop, and then it's post-apocalyptic. The robots are still there, but everything's a bit more.
I had not realized, but someone mentioned today that actually Concrete Cow is not a yearly event. It's an event which takes place twice per year.
That's right.
Do you have a date already for the next edition?
We don't have an exact date because we need to book the hall for it. But around about March is when we tend to do it. So it's always twice a year, and it's nice to see people like that. And I guess you know about lots of the other cons that are around in the UK.
I would need to. I'm trying actually to get myself more aware. Like I found out only this week that next week there's another convention in Milton
Oxford.
Keynes.
No, it's in Oxford.
It's in Oxford. Okay.
Next month there's another one in Northampton, which is near here.
Okay.
Called Contingency. Contingency. All right. But also, there are these ones called the Gary Cons, which are cons that are in a pub called the Garrison in Sheffield. There's about five different cons throughout the year in the same location, and that's really good. It's in an old military fort, and you play in some of the jail cells that the fort had.
Oh, wow.
And it's really good, yeah.
I should look into that.
You should check that out, yeah. Check out the main one there, the big one there is Furnace, which was last weekend, in fact. And there's also a Powered by the Apocalypse one called Revelation there, and there's a sci-fi one called North Star that's also there, and I think there's a Paizo kind of Pathfinder one there, but I don't go to that one.
Yeah, I need to get my head more around it. I mean, as you've seen today, now that I'm a game designer, I'm trying also to show up.
And, are you? Okay.
And it's, you know, it's nice coming out of the pandemic, engaging more with people, and
you should check that. Those cons are great if you can travel. Obviously, Sheffield is a bit far, but
yeah, and trains can be complicated and expensive, sadly. But it's quite a bit within a reach. I mean, I've been to Grogmeet before. Mm-hmm. I would love to go back. That was a great experience.
Have you been to the London Indie Meet?
I've been like ages ago, and I need to go back, so I really...
Yeah, if you're a game designer, that's a good place to go show.
I also really, really need to record... I got a series of different episodes. I had an episode recorded with the Roleplay Heaven. The show, The Rollies, was founded when I was part of La Guilde des Rollies Francophones de Londres, so the Guild of French-speaking Roleplayers of London.
Oh, nice.
So we have an episode about them.
I've got a question, actually. So you play games in France. Do you play in French?
So
pretty much always, or
I much more often plays in English. Actually, it was part of the reason why I let's not go there.
But the thing is, I've noticed, because I've got friends from all over Europe that I play with, German people tend to play in German.
You mean Holland, in the country?
Yes.
In Belgium, they would either play in Dutch, in Flanders. Mm-hmm. They would speak in French in Wallonia, and in Brussels it's in the mix, and there's a little bit of Belgium where they would do in German.
I know some Dutch role players, and they refuse to play in using the Dutch language. They'll use English to actually play.
I interviewed people from Portugal. I'm not sure it was as far as playing, but I know that in Portugal they do not like translations of the books, which is interesting because in Brazil, where they speak Portuguese, they do prefer a translation of the books, but they have disagreements over that. But in France, very much so, people prefer having books in French, and they prefer playing in French.
It's interesting.
For sure. Even if they are fluent in English.
Although actually, I know some Belgians that also refuse to play in French. And they're actually Belgian. So I guess it varies.
Maybe they're Flemish, perchance? Because that sounds more like something the Flemish would prefer.
Sure.
Yeah, for a number of reasons, translation to Dutch, and Flemish is Dutch. There's very few games translated. And even to a large extent, as far as I know, if anyone out there wants to correct me, I would be very interested hearing about that. I actually don't know any game in Dutch. They probably are, but I'm not aware of them, while I'm aware of games in Portuguese, Spanish, even Catalan or Italian or German. I've never been in front of a game in Dutch.
Italian seems to get a lot of translations I've seen. Yeah, you get Dungeon World in Italian, Call of Cthulhu's in Italian. Yeah,
a few
common
local productions also. The One Ring is Italian, actually.
Is it?
I mean, the designer is Italian, but I think it was written straight in English.
I think we're about to do the raffle, though, so
okay, brilliant.
Let's break up for that.
What would be your... So this is the end of the episode. What would be your final word about Concrete Cow and...
I just want to say that, yeah, the role-playing convention scene in the UK is very vibrant. You've got to go out there and find them, but it's well worth it. There's so many cons all over the country, so definitely go for it and then look around and find your local ones and come to them.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you.
This episode included Pantomime Cow by Greg Atkinson, Chip on Your Shoulder, Size of a Boulder by Lemon Knife, Rogue Nation by Josh Woodward, The Passing of Arthur, When You Came and You Took My Hand by Nutmeg, and of course Solta of Rango, or theme song by Bonded Roll. Our logo is designed by Robin Kunz, and you can find it on apparel and a bunch of things on our Tee Public store. So, apologies for how much time it took to release this one. My circumstances changed for the better. I got a much more stable full-time job than I used to, and to be honest, it's quite a dream job for me. So, it's a big achievement. I'm very happy for that. Thanks to everyone who expressed support when I was unemployed and so on, and also giving me a purpose, you listeners of this show, while, you know, during times when I was not fully employed or, yeah, the circumstances were more difficult. But I work full-time now, I'm a dad, and there are plenty of other podcasters who manage to still release weekly, monthly, fortnightly in such circumstances, but that's not my case. So, yeah, apologies for the delay. I will try to be more thorough in the future, but I prefer not to make any commitment. And that's also working in parallel with the fact that now I'm working on designing games. And by the way, if you support the Patreon, I set it up so that you should have access to all my Itch.io content for free, as included within your Patreon subscription, no matter the level. So have a look. If it doesn't work, please let me know. I will happily send you download keys to everything I do and might interest you. Besides that, I got episodes in the pipeline. I mean, they were recorded a while ago, like this one. I've got an interview with Sam Bui, which was recorded a long time ago. I got an interview with Leyline Press and some actual play. We'll see if I can release one or several of those before Dragon Meet. Otherwise, it's likely that I will be at Dragon Meet on December 2nd as part of, I mean, it's not confirmed yet, but I assume I should be there as part of the excellent podcast zone alongside a lot of other very cool tabletop role-playing podcasts. So I recommend to attend Dragon Meet and maybe visit the podcast zone. And I will record something there, and I might decide to edit and release that more recent content first rather than stuff from a year ago. And yeah, that's it. I hope you are all doing well, and see you, if not next month, a little bit later. And in the meantime, have good games.
Holê, holê, holê,
solta o frango e vem com a gente.
Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama. Ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigodudo. Na hora do piriri, cai em mim outra travesti.
Vai, batuque!
Holê, holê, holê,
solta o frango e vem com a gente.
Holê, holê, holê,
solta o frango e vem com a gente.